Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. All right, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Today I have a phenomenal guest with us. This is the legendary coach, Jim Miller. And Coach Miller is, as far as I know, the second winningest all-time wrestling coach in the United States. Won 10 national championships, NCAA Division III with Wartburg. Was a college national champion himself. Won, I think, 21 conference titles. I mean, the numbers are absolutely astounding. Coach has – he's in every Hall of Fame there is possible for the sport of wrestling. So, Coach, man, thanks so much for being on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. This will be fun.
Yeah. So, you know, I very first met Coach Miller. So I think when I was coming out of junior college, I was a Duke All-American, and I think maybe we talked on the phone once or twice when I was kind of looking at some schools. And back before we had a lot of internet access, and I didn't know how great Coach Miller or how great Wartburg was at the time. But anyway, fast forward, probably 5 or 6 years ago, I was at a leadership conference I got invited to for wrestling. Coach Miller was speaking there, and we got to spend some time together. And I walked away going, man, I wish I had wrestled for that man. So as you listen to this interview, make sure you have a notepad, make sure you have pencil and paper, because you're going to learn and you're going to be fired up along the way. So, Coach, let's just kind of start here. Tell me your backstory, where you grew up at, and then how you got into the sport of wrestling.
Hey, man, what were you thinking when you didn't come, when I'm calling you, by the way?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Maybe I wasn't very good, and we probably weren't that good back then. I don't know. I think we were getting good, but I remember a couple of those calls, yeah. But for me, I grew up in Waterloo, Iowa, which at the time was the hotbed of wrestling in the state of Iowa and really across the country. And one of my older brothers, who was 7 years older, it's kind of funny story that I was in first grade, actually. We had no organized sports, none. Well, actually, you could play baseball in the summer. That was it. And there was no youth wrestling, anything like that. And I was in first grade, and I had a note come up, said, my dad was picking me up to go to the dentist. I'm like, I do not want to go to the dentist. But here he goes. I get picked up, but we weren't going to the dentist. Dad just said that to get me out of school early so we'd go watch my older brother wrestle a middle school wrestling match. And there was probably 300 people there, man. But to me at that age, it was amazing. Amazing crowd, amazing meet. My brother won his match. Seeing how proud my dad was, all the excitement. And I was a little guy too. I mean, I was one of the smallest kids in my class. So that's when I wanted to wrestle. I wanted to learn how to wrestle. And my only training was my older brother teaching me moves at home. I mean, but you know what? I was the best wrestler at my school because I was the only one that knew anything. So I had a little status in elementary school with wrestling, and I started, you know, you learn to love the sport is probably the most powerful thing you can do to coach kids, or, you know, you have people, your sons or anybody, they learn to love the sport. And that's what happened, because I just followed my brother's team. Dan Gable was growing, was going through West Waterloo. My brother was going to East Waterloo. Actually, my brother was on the 1964 East Waterloo team. They had five guys that go to state and all five won. And they barely won the state title because West had three state champs and runner-up or something. And anyway, so it was cool. And I got to see a lot of that stuff. And then Gable came through the community, and obviously that even wrapped it up even more, undefeated and so forth. And he was kind of like a phenom back. I mean, that was really unusual to even make the varsity before your junior or senior year. It was just really unusual. And he was winning state titles as a sophomore, because back then you didn't get to wrestle much. It was really rare to wrestle as a ninth grader. So anyway, that was my start. And when I got to middle school, the first time I got to compete. And I also played a lot of other sports, and I encourage everybody to do that too. I played a lot of other sports. But when I got to high school, I pretty much, you know, I walked in, I was 112 pounds. So I just wrestled. And so that was my deal. I didn't know if I was going to go on to college or anything, but my high school coach, his name was Bill Dotson, who was a national champion for Northern Iowa back in the day. And I only got third as a senior, only went to state one time. And I wasn't a real confident student athlete. But he said, you got more in you. You should go. And so I did. And I had that much, you know, sometimes your coach is so powerful. And in the coaching profession, I don't know if people realize coaching is one of the most influential occupations in the world, period. And that was my experience too. If he'd have said go to Alaska, I'd have went to Alaska, you know. So, but he said go to Northern Iowa, and I did. And then, you know, I did well in college. I kind of was a late bloomer, and then went to coach and jumped in, coached at the high school level for 7 years, and then went back to Northern Iowa for eight as an assistant, and then the last 22 at Warburg.
Yeah, so whenever you decided to become a coach, how did that transition go from, I mean, you're a college national champion, you know, how did the transition go from this, like, wrestling career deciding, hey, I want to jump in and be a coach? And were you still competing at all at the time? So what was that?
Yeah, I mean, I got my last year of competition was 75, so I'm 67 right now. But in 76, I was still competing. I got second in the National Open and went to the Olympic trials. But right before the Olympic trials, I had my first interview, and I wasn't, you know, I just wanted to coach. And the good thing about my college coach, his name was Chuck Patton, but when you get a coach that wants to lift you up and help you in your life, not just in your wrestling career, he taught me how to teach. I mean, he was really a good teacher, but he took me to clinics. He put me out front of kids. I probably a dozen times at least with him, you know, he just said, hey, I'm going to bring you along. Or he would actually, after I got a little better, he just send me, and, you know, people would call him and say, why don't you have, you know, let's have Jim Miller go do it. He'll do a good job, whatever. So anyway, he exposed me to that, which really, you know how it is. It really helps you break down what you're going to teach. You can't just, hey, do this. You know, you got to break it down to kids that don't know how to do it. That really helped me. And so I felt I was pretty prepared as far as showing and teaching. I wasn't prepared of all the other things in coaching. I learned the hard way a lot of those things about all the other things that goes along with coaching. You know, it's not just teaching moves, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but I look back, my college coaches really helped me get started on a positive note in my coaching career.
So yeah, it's amazing. You know, I've gone, and with my dad being a coach, I've been around wrestling my entire life. And, you know, I remember growing up going to camps and clinics, and sometimes you see a wrestler who's maybe a phenom, right? A national champion, because I grew up in Oklahoma. So an Oklahoma State national champion, and they walk out there and they're trying to show something, and they know how to do a move, but they can't teach it at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then later on, I'm sure if they do it enough, like you said, and they're exposed, then they realize how to do that. So something I even do with my high school wrestlers, I'll have them come out sometimes and show things, because I want them to really, truly learn it themselves. And
sure,
we learn when we're showing it. But now, so going from being a high school coach into a college coach at Warburg, getting that program going, tell me that story. How did you transition from high school to college?
Well, I wanted to be a I wanted to, I was in my late 20s, and I just figured, hey, if I'm ever going to be a college coach, I probably should maybe look at this. And Northern Iowa, which is the school I wrestled at, they had a coaching change. Coach Patton retired, and Don Briggs took over, and he was an assistant when I was there as a competitor. So he gave me a call, and I wanted to, I kind of thought, if I'm ever going to do it, I better do it now. And I kind of, what do I got to lose, you know?
Yeah.
And so I went there, and that was a whole new learning curve for me, you know. In some ways, it was great, you know. I remember the first day I said, you know, in high school, you're ruled by the bell. You know, school starts at 8:50, your bell rings, you go to another class, you know, 8:55, the bell rings, you've got to be in class 30 minutes for lunch or whatever it is. And, you know, I said, hey, what time you want me to be there tomorrow when I first started? And he goes, I don't know, noon? I go, what? Noon? He goes, yeah, you got something else to do? You can come later or whatever. Because it was so much more, not that time was easier. You know, a lot of your time was at night when you're recruiting and so forth. You know, if you had a, you know, we came in, we watched video, we did some individual lessons during the day, but yeah, you didn't have to be there at 8 o'clock if you didn't want to. And, but you're going to spend a whole lot of time at practice, after practice, recruiting college athletes and all that stuff. So it was a whole new learning curve for me, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And learned a ton at Northern Iowa. Had a great experience. But about the sixth year, I was there 8 years, about the sixth year, I'm, you know, man, I want to be a head coach. You know, I was a head coach in college or in high school for 6 years. I want to, and here I go again. Now I'm in like 37 or something. And I was looking at some Division I jobs. And the negative was for my family, I had married and three boys. They were all a long ways away, the places that I was talking to. And I came home one day, make a long story short, I came home one day and the three boys and my wife were sitting on the couch together, which was really weird. Like, what's going on? You know, it never happened. And anyway, one of the boys finally said, hey, we're not moving. Dad, we're not moving. And they didn't want to, and I get it. They were in middle school and grade. They didn't want to move. And my wife didn't either. Her parents were alive in the community and so were mine. And so then the Wartburg job came up, which was 15 miles away. And that's kind of how that, I said, well, maybe I should look at this. And we did. And we never moved. As a matter of fact, we still haven't moved. I'm still in that house 30 some years later. But, yeah. So, you know, I went up there and end up getting that job. And it was it's kind of ironic because after I got the job and was there a while, I had chances to go what I thought my dream was.
Yeah.
Be a Division I coach. I didn't, at that point, I said, I don't want to go. I'm good. You know, everything's here that I want and I'm having a great experience and athletes are having a good experience. And so we made it a career. You know, I stayed there throughout my career. So it was cool.
Now, whenever you took over at Wartburg, I mean, was it a newer program? Had it been there? And then what I want to hear too is how in the world did you build this thing into the dynasty that it became?
Well, you know, that when I got there, it was 1991, and in the old gymnasium, they had these banners on the top of the rafters, you know. And the last conference banner was 1978 in wrestling. Basketball had all kinds of banners. Actually, this guy had Buzz Levick was his name. He had 14 banners up there in 28 years. And one time it was 9 in a row. Man, I thought that was so cool. And I had to look at it every day. It got to be kind of a burden because I didn't want to look. There's no wrestling. There's no new wrestling banner. And anyway, dude, it was a different deal. We had not won a national title in anything in the history of the college. So the culture was not the same. You know, we hadn't won we hadn't won a conference title 14 years in wrestling and had won a, you know, we'd been in the top 10 one time in history. And so, you know, and I'm thinking, I just tell you, the first meeting with the team, I had, you know, Northern Iowa, we had 35, 40 wrestlers every year. And I think most good college teams have that many or more, whatever. But I'm hoping 25 show up. And I know we're not going to have 35, 40, 25, hopefully. 14 showed up. And after the meeting, within the next couple weeks, six quit. And so I had 8 athletes for 10 weight classes. You know, that was the start at Wartburg. And don't think I wasn't thinking, what have I got myself into here, right? Oh, man. And, you know, I got hired in March, so I had a little bit of time. I recruited 6 kids. So we ended up having like 14 kids. We never filled the, you know, 125 we couldn't fill. Back then it was 118, couldn't fill the weight class. So, but we had a good year. It was a learning process, man. It's hard to build it's hard to change the culture. It's hard. And, you know, they weren't there. It was one of those deals where, you know, they didn't see themselves on top of the podium or even on the podium. Let me just say that. They didn't see our team getting, and when I say see, I'm thinking right here. They didn't see. They didn't have video going on in their minds that our team could get called up to get the trophy, any trophy, you know. And it just wasn't something that was in the culture. So that part was hard. That part was hard to change, man. It was, you know, I felt like I was beating my head against the wall a lot of times that first year especially. But things started to come around. And by the end of the year, we got second in the conference. We could have very easily got fifth. From second to fifth was real close. So, but we got second in the conference. And then we got eighth in the nation, which was the second highest finish in the school's history. And so, wow, we got some momentum. You know, we're on the move. You know, you know, you kind of create that with recruits. And it was hard with recruits. You know, we weren't an established program. So, but we did get a few. You know, you had to dig in, work hard, and we got lucky on a couple kids, and we started getting better. And the very next year, we were national runners up. And then we're kind of off to the races, you know. So 18 of those 22 years, we were first or second in the nation, you know. So, but you got to, you know, success. I'm just going to say this. Success can happen anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, flat out. Success can happen anywhere. But the leaders have to believe it can happen. It's not going to happen if the leaders don't think it can happen. It's not going to. And then you also got to bring along, I felt I had to bring along our alumni, our fan base, our administration, obviously the athletes, the parents. I felt I had to help nurture them too, so they started believing that we could. And that happened as we got better. That happened. We kind of jumped up real high nationally. Usually it doesn't happen like that. Hey, the first goal I had was to fill the team. That's where I started. Fill the team, be 500 or whatever. You know, whatever everybody's scenario's in, you define your success as you go, and then you keep raising the level as you go. You know, as you jump on, complete one, you hit the other. But, you know, and you got to be able to inspire your team that it can happen, and they get on the same board as you are, because they're not going to want to work real hard if they don't believe that can happen. But as soon as they think they see that happening themselves, that they could be on the podium, that our team can get called up to get the trophies and so, man, that's pretty cool. And their thought process goes up. And I call it this, how you think has everything to do with how you perform and what you attain. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna say that again, how you think has everything to do with how you perform and what you attain in anything, business, anything, school, athletics. And so part of my deal was, and one reason I know that we've had success is I worked on that every day. We talked about things in practice, in the hallway, in my office with athletes and so forth, on how they think. You know, like I might just say, hey, I can't wait to see you at nationals this year. at that time, I might not, I didn't know if that kid was going to Nationals, but he didn't either. He didn't either. But that picture, that video got planted in his mind. You know, did it work 100% now? But I'm trying 100%. I'm trying to say that. Or, you know, somebody comes out of the weight room, man, you're getting strong. Wow. You know, and so you're trying to inspire your team to follow, man. You're trying to get them to start thinking at a higher level, because you can imagine what happened in our culture was that kids start thinking. And when you got a team, most of the team start thinking that way, you could just see the difference in our practices. And, you know, we had one goal. That was everybody puts on the uniform, fight their butt off the whole time. That's the goal. It wasn't winning no title. It's fight. And when that started happening as a group in our room, the accomplishments started happening, and the championships were a result of all that.
It's good to hear you say that. I know that there's different philosophies, different thoughts that people have. I know one thing that we talk often about is controlling the controllables, right? We can't control the outcome, but we can put ourselves in the best mm-hmm. position to have a good outcome. And mm-hmm. so is it, you know, with you guys winning national titles and stuff, was it just kind of a given? Because I feel like it's kind of a given. We all want to win state titles. We all want to win national titles. Did you guys talk about winning those things, or like you said, or did you just focus on like, we're just going to fight?
Yeah, we focused mostly on our effort. But when it got to that point, we talk about it. Like if we're having a dual meet, that's what we talked about. And it might be the worst team in the league. When I retired, we had 165 wins in a row in our conference, which was in Division III, was the best conference in the country. You know, upsets can happen when you don't think they can. Mm-hmm. We never went there. Every duel, that's what we're talking about. This duel. Your match, the one right in front of you. The most important match you got is the one right in front of you. And that's why all these, you know, 21 consecutive conference titles, the dual meet streak, that's why that happened. Because that's what we focused on. And so when it got to the point of, okay, here's our qualifier to go to Nationals, that's what we talked about. Mm-hmm. Here's our, now we got a chance to win a national champion, compete for one, that's what we talked about. Now, was there things during the year about the national championship? Sure. And we'd go, and somebody, and usually it was with the press, would bring it up. Someone else would bring it up, but yeah, we'd go there and then we'd come right back and to the one in front of us, you know? Yeah, we talked about a lofty goal. Do we want to win? Absolutely. Do we have a chance to compete for a championship? Yeah. But then to get there, for that to happen, we got to come right back here, this very whatever's right in front of us. So I think we did a good job with that, and didn't get ahead of ourselves, you know, on the next meet or the next tournament or the one that's, you know, a month down the road and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, we talked about it, but we lived in the present.
Yeah, that's I think it's pretty much what we do in our program. And, you know, I hear a lot of course, I try to study the best coaches out there and see what they do and always add to, you know, everybody's got their own coaching personality or their own personality. But now whenever I got to be in the leadership, I don't want to say conference because it was just a small group of us that got to be in there with you and hear you speak. There are a couple things you said that just stood out to me, stuck in my mind. I still tell the stories. I still use them. One, I'm going to start here, is I remember you talking about darts of positivity, all right? So throwing like little positivity darts at people. And you talked a minute ago about, you know, telling that kid when he's coming out of the weight room, like, hey, you're getting strong, or I can't wait to see you at Nationals this year. What are some of the things that you did to build up your wrestlers mentally? These darts of positivity, just tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was always looking for an angle. And, you know, I can't tell you if I was going across one of my guys in the hallway, I'd be saying something. You're looking good today. I mean, it may not have nothing to do with wrestling. Yeah. But it was positive. Man, if I had a professor say something about one of our kids, I really like so-and-so. That's on your team. Very respectful young man. Don't think I didn't blow that up to everybody on the team. I do it. That's how you represent us, man. That's what I'm talking about. You know, something at the beginning of practice. And it might be the best guy on the team, might be the worst guy. It didn't matter. He did something positive, and I'm going to blow that up. And sometimes I'd even try to create it like, hey, I'd ask the professor, how's so-and-so doing? And if they said something positive, I'm using it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't always me sometimes. I'd use, you know, we'd have somebody stop by the room or, you know, we were on Iowa Public Television back in the day a number of times. Dan Gable was one of the speakers, Tim Johnson. Hey, Gable said this afterward. Whatever's there, you use, you know. And I'd also use, and it depends on what we're doing. As we're trying to build ourselves up to be a better team, you did hear that. And then sometimes we were prohibitive favorites, prohibitive. And I remember just an example one year, whatever year this was, I don't remember, but the New England Patriots were, everybody was talking about they were going to run the table. They were going to go undefeated, the first team since Miami Dolphins, all that stuff. But in the, and I don't know what you call it. For us, it'd be the semifinals. I don't know what they call it. Mm-hmm. Like the finals of their conference or whatever. But in the, but the game before the Super Bowl, they got beat. And it was headlines in one of our papers, Des Moines Register, headlines, something. And I brought that in and I said, because we were prohibitive favors too. Guess what? They forgot to win the semis. The New England Patriots, they forgot. And I'll show them the headlines and all that. Just to make a point that, dude, it's one game at a time, one match at a time. Boy, that was – and sometimes you hit a home run, and that one clicked, man, because they're all watching football. We're all following football and so forth. So you're just looking for – you're looking – I was always thinking and looking. And but, yeah, I mean, the mental part is – so important, man. And I'd just soon have a kid maybe that thought – I wanted athletes that thought I could. I mean, I had 37 individual national champ. Well, 37 times someone won the national title. Not one time in 37 times, and one of them come off the mat and say, Coach, you believe this? I got lucky. I got lucky, man. No, they thought they could. Yeah. You know, they thought they could. And so that's kind of, I don't know how good that description was, but that's kind of how I lived my coaching life.
No, that's great. I mean, so many times I think, and I have to catch myself as a parent doing this, you know, I want to, as a coach, I want to catch people doing things well. I want to point mm-hmm. those out, because it's easy to see the negative or catch the negative and get onto a kid when they're not working hard. Again, with my own children, sometimes I see them messing up and I get onto them, but I don't do a great job of catching them doing things well. And I remember you talking about that. And so it really stuck in my brain, because probably two of the best – so my dad's in the National Hall of Fame in the Oklahoma branch, great coach. But two of the best coaches I've ever met probably are my JUCO wrestling coach, Jody Thompson, mm-hmm. and yourself. And you and Coach T are a lot alike, which is like, why didn't I go wrestle for Coach Miller after Coach T? You guys, but you guys do that. And I've told this story before, but I remember going to the Omaha Open – uh-huh. walking in there, and I'm wrestling for Labette, and I walk in there and I see Iowa on the mat warming up. And I remember thinking in my brain, you better get ready because Labette's here, which is silly, right? And I end up beating an Iowa guy that day.
Yeah.
But Coach T had us believing so much, you know, that he just always was doing things like you. He's always just catching us doing something right, calling it out, putting these thoughts in our head. And I drank the Kool-Aid, man. So I believed it so much that I thought like, hey, we can compete with anybody here, you know, and on a consistent basis, could I always beat an Iowa guy? Probably not. But I did that day. I did a couple times in my career. And so, all right.
Let me just add too, you're talking about, you also have to tell them the truth sometimes too.
Yes.
And that's hard. And that's what you're talking about with Jody. So, I mean, you also got to be able to say, hey, man, you got to get with it. Might be in school. It might be skipping workouts. Might be, sometimes for me, it was just being late all the time. Dude, this can't happen, you know? And so, or it could be somebody got into some trouble or whatever it might be. Sometimes you got to be the truth. And they know that. Once they know that, you're so much more authentic to them as far as when you say something positive, you know? So I wanted to be honest with them too. And they need that too, just as well.
Yep. I remember three times Coach T got after me. Three. I remember exactly. because they stood out, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I knew he'd get after me. I knew he'd pump me up. He would do both. Absolutely. So, okay. Now, I have another question, but I want to come back to it because you talked about, you know, professors, administrators. What are some of the things that you did to connect your wrestling team with the college as far as like, and you said earlier, you know, with the parents and all that, but for the coaches that are out there listening, or let's say a CEO and he's wanting to connect with the community and whatever, what are some of the things that you did to connect the bigger picture?
Well, number one, talking about being good citizens and good, being a positive part of the college. I think we need to talk about that. And, you know, and when we do, and we do some, and you pick out examples of people that are doing that, but we don't want to be, I mean, I can say, here's one point that I know made a point with our team. We can win a national champion. We just did. We can win a national title, but if we're a national title and a bunch of bums, nobody's going to care. It ain't going to matter, man. We're still a bunch of bums. And so that hit home, you know, no matter what we do, how good we are, blah, blah, blah. If you're a bum, you're a bum. And so let's be the best at what we do and be good citizens and good people on our campus that are contributing to our college. That hit home, you know, yeah. And then I would bring in people to visit with our kids often, guest speaker, we called it, just guest speaker every so often, maybe it's a couple times a month or something. Might be another coach who I knew would be a positive message, or might be somebody in the community, might be someone inspirational, might be, you know, might be our worst, one of our worst athletes that had a success story later. Man, that I'm just glad I stuck with wrestling because it taught me all these life lessons that helped me be very successful in the rest of my life and my business and so forth. Man. Those things were so powerful. So they're not just hearing from me. I'm trying to bring in other people to emphasize or make the point. And I emphasize after they're done. But that needs to happen. When I say, I don't know if there's a day that went by that something wasn't said to try to improve our athletes. And it wasn't just, and I'm not talking about technique or strength training. And to get them thinking at a higher level that we could be great in everything we do. You know, so that was the deal. That was the challenge. And that's what we tried to do. And did it make a difference with every single time? No. I mean, we had people that, you know, that struggled with certain things, but overall made a huge difference, huge difference. And I still hear from some of those athletes from decades ago that coach, one of my deals was, hey, man, you got to do it anyway. You know, that whole term, do it anyway. I had to do it anyway today, man. I had a baby up all night and blah, 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 whatever the scenario was. That was one. That was a true scenario. And I had to do it anyway, man. And so, man, that's cool. That's cool to hear because when you dig in on adversity, no matter what it is, you're a better man to do that.
Absolutely. Now, did you guys have some – what were some of your key phrases? Like one of ours, and I got this from Coach Thompson, but TCOB, take care of business. You know, so we have sort of some – key phrases that are like pillars of our program. So what were some of the things like, do it anyway?
Yeah, do it anyway. I don't care if you feel like it or not. Nobody cares. Do it anyway. I'll fight somebody. Hey, dude, to me, the simpler it could be, the better.
Yes.
You know, hey, shut up and win. When I say shut up, that means all that inner things that they're thinking. It's not just what they're saying. It's also what they're thinking. Oh man, what if I don't look good today? What if I don't know how I feel? You shut up and win. You know, so those are, if you talk to my guys, they could probably run off about 10 of them. And lift up somebody else by how you compete. I love that. Lift up somebody just by how you compete. You know how it is when you're watching somebody on your team and they're inspiring you just by their effort. Shoot, yeah. Everybody can do that. Why can't all of us do that? We can do that. So, and when you get a team doing that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love it. So one of my high school coaches, he was our football coach and my dad's assistant wrestling coach, and Coach Adbury, he's old school. He's, I mean, when you know, we're literally playing high school football and practicing. He's like, water makes you weak. And, you know, I remember dislocating my finger, and he's like, you got 9 more fingers, suck it up, you know. But he had all these, and he probably couldn't tell you all the things he said, but we can. We call them Atterburyisms. And yeah, I'm sure that your team or your former athletes have a million of them. So here's another story I remember you telling that, like, and I have used, so like you, you do a lot of public speaking. I do a lot of public speaking as well. And I have used your story in some of my stories. So, and I don't remember, sometimes we adapt things in our head. I call it 10 steps. I don't remember the number of steps. Mm-hmm. You told this story about, I'm going to let you tell the story, but taking the number of steps from your office to the wrestling room and why you did that.
Yeah, there were 17 steps from my locker.
I'm going to write that down. Wrestling. 17 steps. I get it
17
right.
steps. My locker to the wrestling room door. And I tried to get to the point what we wanted to accomplish or what I wanted to accomplish and then work backwards from that. Right? We wanted to win the national title. What? Okay, what do we got to be doing in November, December, January, and so forth? Well, I wanted to have a great practice every day. And how do you do that? Well, I knew one thing. When I was motivated coming into practice, we had better practices. When I came in and I was lackadaisical and our assistant coaches were, we had a lackadaisical practice. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I coached 37 years. I mean, don't think there weren't times I didn't feel like going to practice. But I got to the point where I intentionally, by the time I got to that door, I would be motivated. I would be ready to go. And I used those 17 steps as an imaginary, I'm going to throw off any issues I got, any baggage that I had. Oh, you know, my wife was mad at me. I forgot to do something. You know, I didn't go to the bank, whatever it was. I'm going to throw that stuff off. I'm throwing off my baggage in my mind mentally as I'm walking those 17 steps. And by the time I got to that door, let's go. Let's do this, you know. Let's have a great day today. And after a while, I mean, there was time, a couple times over the years where I had an assistant that say, hey, coach, man, you come in like that every day. And the other thing I did, I always felt better after working out, yeah. Just in general. I felt better. I felt invigorated after working out. So I would time my workout. I would go work out, and then I'm working out for half hour. 35 minutes before I go to practice, I'm doing my 30-minute workout. And I'm sweat, felt great. That's when I went to my locker. That's when I went to the 17 steps, and I literally did feel great. But it didn't matter, because here's the key. No matter what I felt like, that's the key. No matter what I felt like, when I opened that door, I'm ready to go. And I had assistants a couple of times say, hey, coach, you come in like that every day. I mean, are you like faking it sometimes? I'm like, I don't know, man. I got so good at it, I don't know if I was faking it or not faking it. But it didn't really matter, did it? And so it just became a success habit. And I told our athletes, hey, don't bring your issues to practice. Leave them in your car. Leave them in your apartment. Leave them in your locker. I literally mentally put mine in my sock, put my sock in my shoe, put my shoe in the locker, just like I'm mentally, intentionally putting it somewhere. I ain't coming with anything. And you know what? We had so much better practice, you know, and there were times where kids had issues, you know, they got issues, you know, I got this test, I'm broke, I had a fight with my girlfriend, whatever it was. After a great practice, I'd say, hey, how we doing? Ah, coach, I got this. Don't worry about it. Wasn't that big a deal, you know? And so that's what I call a success habit. You're doing something time after time, you know? It's just like waking up in the morning. We got early morning practice. Hey, when the alarm goes off, get up. Don't set 10 minutes. Hey, just get up and let's go do this. Became a success habit, you know? And so that's what the 17 steps were.
No, I absolutely love it. Like I said, I've adapted it, stolen it. I still give you credit. You know, you say things enough times, it becomes your own. But
it does.
It's a story that impacted me, and I try to do the same thing now. We have stairs walking up to our wrestling room. It's on a mezzanine. So when I get to the top of those stairs, I'm Coach P. right? So I'm not just Chad Parks. I'm not having any other issue. I'm Coach P when I hit the top of those stairs, and I'm coming That's in awesome, ready to roll. And I remember you all.
Yeah, and I can't tell. Yeah. And same thing with, like, if you're a business guy and you're having a meeting with your staff, or how you walk in, you own the place, or you're a manager, how you walk in affects everybody around you. You know, you think about it. Everybody's been around people that are negative. You don't even want to be around them. It sucks your energy. Or you can help give them energy. What's happening, man? How you doing? Have a great day. You know, it just makes it, just that little bit makes a difference.
Absolutely. And I remember you added on that whenever you would get home, going from your car to the house, doing the same thing.
Yeah, man.
And that's something that stuck with me too, having a wife and kids. I don't always feel like coming home and giving them my energy, but.
That was actually, I learned that later in my career, and I wish I would have learned it earlier, but you know, I'd come home, half the time I'd walk in on my phone. Hey, what's up? I'm talking to some recruiter, And finally, one day my wife said something that stuck with me. It was pretty profound, really. She said, hey, you know what? You're home, but you're not home. Mm-hmm. She was 100% right, 100%. And I had three kids at home, man. Shut off. So I started, get to the driveway. I started focusing on that door. My 17 steps before I walked in the house, shut off your cell phone. Wife, hear what the kids are doing. And I just, I didn't miss out on anything. My kids go to bed 9:30, whatever. And, I was fine. Somebody's going to call me. They could leave a message and I'll call them back at 9:30. And it wasn't that big a deal, but that was a big change for me. That was positive.
Yeah. Very good. Now you use the term, I wrote it down real quick. Success habits. Tell me in the daily life of Coach Jim Miller, what are some of these success habits? Like, you have a morning routine. What are some of the things that you do to stay successful?
Well, back then, now I work out every morning. I haven't missed a morning in, I don't know, maybe a day a month, some comes up, but that's just part of my day, and I feel better. I feel more fit, because I don't want to not be able to do things I want to do and so forth, but I have more energy. More energy. So it's just a positive success habit, So that's one thing for me. When I was coaching, I don't know if this was a great thing to do, but I was at the office every day. It was just part of my habit. Even Christmas Day, I went up there for a little bit. I might have been writing thank you notes to people that helped our program or something to that effect. But it was just a good thing for me in my mind. It just helped me. Maybe it was only for 45 minutes or an hour, but I did something positive that day and I went home feeling good about it, And so, but I think a lot of things that you do, you're juggling, and a lot of things, I think one of the biggest things for me and probably so many people is, you're going to have adversity no matter what.
Yeah.
We had adversity trying to get good, just normal things. And hey, we're trying to get better. We're not as good as we need to be. I had adversity then, but I also had adversity when we're the prohibited favorites in the nation. There was adversity. There's adversity around every corner. You go around, there's something. If you got 30 kids on your team and half of them have a problem, you got 15 problems.
Yeah.
You're right? So there's going to be adversity. So the key became, how fast can you get rid of the adversity? How fast can you get rid of the negative? And again, as a coach, how fast can I deal with the negative? Sometimes it's a long drawn out thing and you just do it. But I kind of put it like, and I'm talking to coaches a lot and say, hey, well, how do you react when a young person misses an easy layup? How do you react if one of your kids drop a touchdown pass? They're beating themselves up on it. Do you beat them up too? How long are you going to beat them up? What happens when your young man in wrestling goes out and gets thrown to his back right away? Well, sometimes you're thinking, oh man, this match is over. Or you're thinking, we got a long way to go, baby. And what does your athlete do? If he jumps up and runs back to the middle, hey, we're in this, man, we're fine. So you can kind of tell what's been going on in those cultures, So how fast can you get rid of the negative is a big thing. In recruiting, hey, coach, I work on a kid for 2 years. Hey, coach, I'm going somewhere else. Chad Parks tells me he's not coming, going somewhere else. Well, how's that going to, how long are you going to hold on to it? Dude, you got, because there's been times, especially early in my career, it affected every call I had to do that night. And maybe if I was calling 10 people and that was call number five, those next five calls weren't very good because I'm still holding on to that one that said he's not coming. Mm-hmm. Forget about it, man. And move on, whether it's the touchdown pass or the kid got thrown to his back or the phone call or whatever it is. So, and if your athletes start learning that, how much better will you be when they can overcome adversity or let it go? And the biggest thing for me was probably the biggest example for a lot of coaches is, what are you going to do when you get a bad call from the referee? You going to hold on to it? Are you going to yell? You going to be irate at the ref? How long? How long are you going to do that? Because if the more you do it, don't think, the more likely so will your athletes when they get a bad call. If you can let it go, okay, let's go. You it still might be with you, but you're letting it go till after the tournament or you know. So will your athletes let it go. And that'll move your culture up. Plus, you'll be a better coach. I mean, I realize, hey, man, I'm not a very good coach when I'm still mad at this referee an hour later at a tournament, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big part. And I think, you know, it's just like anything. The better you get better at that by practice, let it go. And I even tell people on my staff, hey, just come up and tell me, Coach Miller, let it go, man. Let it go. And I'm going to do the same for them. So tell each other, work together with each other. And when your staff starts doing that, it'll be a lot better with your athletes too when something happens bad for them.
Yeah, man, what great life advice right there. Let it go. How fast can you get over adversity? So, you know, and I know the exact thing happened to me, and I'm glad I learned this. And I can still remember it. There's a coach here in Kansas. He's a kids club coach, but he is highly successful. His guys go on to win state titles. He's had a couple of Division I national champions, and he's at the state tournament. One of my kids gets upset in the semifinals, and I'm upset. I think this kid's, you know, going to be a finalist, and it was a bad call type thing. And I'm walking down this little hallway, and I see him, and he comes up, Coach Parks, and he always like daps me up and hugs me, and then he stops, and he's like, "What's wrong?" He's like, "You look upset." I'm like, "Oh, one of my guys, you know, just got beat or whatever." And he says, "Coach, get over it." He says, "How many more guys you still got to wrestle this round?" And I had like three more guys that round or four more guys. And he says, "It's not fair for them." And so I'm like, holy moly. So I go to the bathroom and wash my face off and come out. And I'm like, he's exactly right. Now I can't be in crybaby mode or anger mode or whatever and go back out. That cheats everybody else on my team. And I learned the lesson that day. And I'm glad he called me out on it. So
that's a big lesson. Good for you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It changed changed the way I reacted to things, and it's still not easy. It's still not
no.
Easy. So now, Coach, let's say that you got a guy, and we'll start to wrap this up. Man, I'd love to have your wisdom on here for like 4 hours if we could. But let's say you have an athlete who's average, and we want to get them to above average or great, you know, because we can apply this to parenthood, to business, or whatever. What are some of the things that you would do to get that kid to jump levels?
Well, I think one thing, relationship builders win championships. Mm-hmm. Relationship builders as bosses are successful bosses and business builders. And so a lot of it depends on your relationship, you know, and I'm just talking about, hey, you love your kids, no matter their status. You know, I was lucky because I started out in Northern Iowa, I was fourth string. You know, yeah, I won a couple national titles, but I was fourth string. But I'm telling you, my coach, I felt just as valued as the best guy on the team. That was a big lesson for me, just feeling that way. And so, you know, being in a relationship builder, being in a situation where they understand, hey, this just ain't about me. This isn't about me as a coach. It ain't about you, just you as an athlete. It's about all of us as a team and so forth. And so tell me your question again. Did I get off track?
No, you're good. I mean, I just want to know, how do you get an average kid above average?
Yeah. Okay. So that's part of it.
Yeah.
They're feeling valued, man. They're feeling valued. And you know, and you encouraging them that, hey, this can happen. And I would use examples of other people. I'm just telling you, typically for me, we'd have a senior on that team that was really good, one of the best guys on the team. He wasn't good when he got there. He wasn't good. I would have him tell the story to that young man as a freshman. So maybe, after practice, if I'd see a young guy sitting along the wall, body language is pretty evident, especially for freshmen, young people, and you could just tell. I said, hey, I might go talk to him, or I might have assistant coach go talk to him, but some of the most powerful ones I've found is one of our athletes sit down and say, hey, man, I know, same thing for me as a freshman. I got my butt kicked. I was not a good, and man, that opens up their mind like, wow, this guy is one of the guys I'm looking to as one of the best guys. So I was looking at all different avenues to try to help people, but it also, you know what, that also helped that senior.
Yeah.
Counseling those people to learn to become a leader, to be able to identify, oh man, this guy's kind of down to help. And when they start picking them up without, then later after that, they would have a more tendency to go do it on their own. Mm-hmm. So it was cool. So, but I think just loving the kids, no matter what, picking them up, no matter what, you care about them, no matter what, you care about them, no matter if they win or lose, they care about them when they're gone. So once they feel that, that's a game changer. I mean, I've heard a lot of kids, hey man, I'd run through the wall for coach, all that stuff. And other people would say they met this young man who used to wrestle for him. He'd say, he'd run through the wall for you, coach. And I go, you know what? He would, because part of the reason is because he knows I'd do the same for him. I'd run through the wall for him. And so, and you think about it, who's your best boss you ever had? It's probably some similar qualities, Who's the best people that have helped you along the way, whether it's friends or siblings or anything? It's probably a lot of the same qualities there. They're looking out for you and they're picking you up no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, relational leadership. It's the number one. So
I like that. Yep.
Yes, sir. Okay. Last question.
Okay.
Put you on the hot seat. But I'm gonna let you pick here. All right. Three options. I want you to tell me about either a highlight. It could be anything from your life. A highlight, a hero, a hero for you, or a heartbreak that happened. And tell me about it. A highlight, hero, or heartbreak.
Man, I've had a lot of all those, heartbreak, a lot of heroes, a lot of all of them. But let's land on something positive for me again. And I'm going to go back to high school, okay? I'm going into my senior year of high school, and I had never even qualified for state yet. And fortunately for me, a new coach came in that year, and he inspired me. And this was kind of the start of the niche of coaching and how powerful coaching was. I didn't really understand it at the time, but something you say as a mentor, as a coach, as a leader, how much impact that might have. And for me, early in that season, my coach said, Jimmy, when we get to state this year, and he kept talking, I didn't hear another word he said, man. I'm thinking, Coach thinks I can go to state. Coach thinks I can go to state. That's the first time I visualized myself walking into the state tournament as a competitor instead of a spectator.
Yeah.
That's the first time. He planted that video in my mind. I don't know if it changed me. That changed when I say how you think has everything to do with how you perform, what you attain. That changed me, that my level jumped. My excitement went up, my enthusiasm went up, my work ethic went up.
Yeah.
Because of one sentence, when we get to state this year, man. So.
Man, they just
reminded me. I'm getting boosted with guns thinking about it, man. Now.
that just reminded me. I literally just had a picture flash through my mind in our middle school wrestling room when I was a kid. My dad had middle school. He was a middle school and high school coach, and he had a picture up on the wall. I still remember he had a Martin Luther King quote, and then he had Proverbs 29:18, where there is no vision, the people will perish. And I remember like seeing that as a kid, and I didn't understand it. I'm like, if I lose my vision, I'm going to die. You know, and then when I got older, I understood it. But that coach just planted a vision in your mind.
Yeah.
He did that, you know, and like you said, once that vision happened, everything else changed. Man, that's got me fired up right there. So
very cool, man.
Yeah. Well, Coach Miller, man, thank you so much for taking the time to be on here, sharing your wisdom. This is one that I'm going to go back in. Hopefully everybody listening goes back in and takes some notes and write these things down, because there's so many like nuggets that are in there. Again, thank you so much.
Well, I want to tell you something. You've inspired me. You inspired me with your book. I read your book and inspired me to start my own. So I got to do it anyway, is the name of the book. And then maybe by the end of the year, we'll have it out. But I didn't realize how much work that is to write a book. You got to really dig into your heart and soul, and it was great. But I'm excited about it. But you inspired me with your stuff, man. And same thing today. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Coach. I can't wait to read the book. So, hey, if anybody wants to contact you, and actually we'll probably jump back on and do this again when your book comes out so we can help promote it. But sure. If anybody wants to contact you or follow you on social media or whatever, how do we do that?
I'm on Facebook, Twitter. I'm on all that stuff, but I'm at the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. So jmiller@nwhof.org is my deal. My Twitter, I don't know. Maybe you can just, I don't know that stuff, but can you put that out for me? My Twitter, absolutely. Probably a good way. Yeah.
Yep. I'll have it all in. I'll
have it in. I put, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Do you have a website?
Coach Jim Miller speaking.
Okay. Yeah. I thought so. And I'll get that and I'll put it all in your notes. But because, you know, anybody listen, Coach Miller is a phenomenal speaker. He'll come in, speak to teams, businesses, whatever, fire people up. I know you do some performance coaching, things like that. So
yeah.
I'll get all that put in the show notes. But again, thanks, Coach, for being on, man.
Okay, Coach. Be following you, man.
Yes, sir. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. May God bless you and shine his face upon you. Until next time. See ya. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, that's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up, and this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, T-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love, and God bless.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.